Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here. We're at Eurofolk Radio, and this is the voice of Christian Israel. As usual, my guest is Pastor David Martins of South Africa. And today our subject is going to be a continuation of what we were talking about last week, the ongoing white genocide, especially of white farmers in South Africa, and the blindness of many, not, of course, much of it's deliberate, the blindness of the media and even some people, some white people who can't even admit that genocide is happening to white people in South Africa today. Isn't this incredible, Pastor Martins?
Absolutely incredible, Pastor. But this has been an agenda which has been waged against the Boer people since the previous century, and in fact, the previous millennia, because of if you take the onset of the Anglo-Boer War and the events that had led to the Anglo-Boer War, you can see that there's a clear agenda and a clear conspiracy between the Jews, the Afrikaners, or the Cape Dutch, as they were known then, and the Freemasons. Mm-hmm. And there was a disinformation and misinformation war that was waged between the against the Boer republics way before the onset of the First Anglo-Boer War. And that particular agenda that was already constructed during this conspiracy, you can see how this agenda had been followed through, and that agenda is still being waged today. Mm-hmm. In so many of the actions of the Afrikaners, F.W. de Klerk being an Afrikaner Freemason,
yes,
that had succumbed and that had abdicated to the Freemason blacks, of which everybody knows Nelson Mandela, a Freemason. He was released because he became a Freemason.
Okay.
And, of course, the Freemasons are still in control. They're still controlling the black Freemasons from the rear, out of sight. And we know that they have multiple agendas which they wage. They have the problem. They create the problem, and they create the so-called false solution to the problem.
Right.
All of the intents and purposes for ultimate control of every individual on this planet.
Sure.
And you can see these false flag events that have been waged in America and also in Canada and in Paris. You know all about it, these false flag events. They are created in order to set up a police state.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in South Africa. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because my series on the Restoration Hour, which I do on Saturday mornings, has been focusing on Freemasonry and the American Civil War and the extent to which Freemasons were instrumental in fomenting that civil war here in America, right? It's a subject which is taboo, and mainstream media and academia simply avoid the subject because the pretense is there is no such thing as secret societies, and Freemasons can't be as powerful as we claim they are. And so consequently, we have this false narrative which totally avoids the involvement of secret groups like the Freemasons and the international Jews. And consequently, you have these insipid denials that we're getting today that, well, first of all, there's a denial that there is even such a thing as white genocide happening in South Africa. What, are you blind? Are you idiots? Yeah, I mean, what's going on here? How can people be so blind as to not even admit? Go ahead.
Pastor, yes. In terms of this, with the political turmoil that South Africa went through in the 80s and 90s, late 70s, 80s, and early 90s, prior to the 1994 election and even thereafter, it led to the deformation and the reformation. I say deformation and the reformation because there was such a lot of turmoil in political parties where the old Progressive Party and the United Party combined to form the Democratic Alliance. Or the Democratic Party and then eventually the Democratic Alliance. Now, the Progressive Party was a Jewish-controlled, in fact, the whole Progressive Party was in fact a Jewish, very tightly controlled Jewish political party, and they were under the control of, I nearly said Margaret Matham, but Margaret Matham used to be the mayoress of Durban at the time, but under Helen Suzman. Helen Suzman immigrated to, Helen Suzman immigrated to Britain not long after 1994, and or she immigrated to England not long after 1994, and she was totally aghast with the fact that what South Africa and the black rule eventually turned out to be, because she even stated that.
Right, that's something she worked very feverishly to create. And then,
Know,
and then abandoned it once she realized what she had done. Of course, you know, we know that the Jews deliberately provoke, you know, the demise of white people everywhere, and so we could foresee her abandoning the cause once she was successful in destroying, you know, white power in South Africa.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
but go ahead. Also, the other thing one must remember, Pastor, is that many of these Jews in themselves are merely pawns in the bigger picture, the bigger concept of things, because many of them are not necessarily very knowledgeable in the fact that there is a conspiracy, that there is a worldwide conspiracy of eradicating the world's population, because so many of these things are hidden from the pawns themselves.
Right.
And I have reason to believe that even if W. de Klerk, even though he was a Freemason, and even though he had been put into position, he was elected to be the one that was going to abdicate white power in South Africa to black power. And that whole thing was, I believe, South Africa was chosen as the litmus paper for these events, because South Africa had the ideal catalysts for that in the very large black population. The apartheid regime over quite a number of years, and the atmosphere, the milieu was created in which black power had eventually taken its roots in South Africa. The event of Hector Peterson in 1976 in Soweto, which was was blown totally out of proportion because he was a black school child that was forced with Molotov cocktails against the police. And it wasn't just white police, there were black police as well.
Right.
So these black school children were burning down their schools, and they were throwing petrol bombs at the police. And he was shot in the crossfire between those adult black conscious, and of course they deified Hector Peterson. We even have a youth day now, which was on the 16th of June, I think it was, but the idea of it was to use this particular day to antagonize those that wanted to speak or that want to speak the truth of these things, and then also to deny the Boers their heritage and their traditions and their holidays and the days that they have of a historical value to the Boers.
Right.
And one must remember that since 1902, and this is something which is very, very important, when the Boers signed the peace treaty of Vereniging on the 31st of May 1902, they literally signed away their existence, because the Afrikaners have been tasked by whomever their masters are to obliterate the existence of the Boers, and the Afrikaners have opted for the same methods that the Khazarian Jews and the Ashkenazi Jews have used to infiltrate the tribe of Judah to become Jews.
That is the Boer people, right?
To create this false Israel.
Yeah.
Which is not the biblical Israel. It's a false Israel created by Jews, created by the Rothschilds in 1948, setting up a state from which they can wage their terrorist acts, because it's acts of terrorism that they are now perpetrating against the true Israelites across the globe.
Yes. Well, even Adolf Hitler predicted that the Israeli state would be nothing but a sanctuary for Jewish criminals. Right.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. But here I see, you know, this is all starting to work against the Freemasons in South Africa, because as the white population declines, and only white people in the main pay any taxes, because you have, what, 5 or 6 million white people paying the bulk of the taxes, with the majority of blacks being on welfare and really doing no work, the power base that the Freemasons exploit is deteriorating. What's going to keep their power? And blacks don't care if a white man is a Freemason or not. You know, this threat that the black community is making against the white community, that they're going to exterminate the whites, applies to the Freemasons too. What are they going to do?
Pastor, one of the things that one must remember is that prior to F.W. de Klerk's abdication from his seat of power in the forefront, he has now basically stepped back and he is pulling strings from the rear.
Okay.
There is a massive de Klerk Foundation that runs on very much the same principles as the Clinton Foundation.
Okay. And oh, no.
Absolutely,
oh, that's not
Pastor.
Good news. Mm-hmm.
And prior to his abdication, or at the time of this abdication, that he actually went in cahoots with this. There was this Project Hammer thing where thousands of tons of South African gold was shipped overseas. And I believe, I have reason to believe that those monies are being used to artificially by means of facades to uphold the current economy in South Africa, to make these blacks, I cannot call them anything but stooges, because they are still being controlled from the rear by Freemasons, them being Freemasons themselves.
Yeah.
And we can hear this in the South African news and newspapers and media. We can hear these whispers or these talks that the whites still control the economy in South Africa. And how can that be when there are hardly any men in the street, white people in the street, hardly any of them? You don't see them in the whole, well,
right.
I live in Cape Town, and wherever I look, whenever you go into any municipal office, it is manned and it is controlled and it's dictated to by people of color or coloreds or
right. Mulattoes or blacks. Mulattoes or blacks.
And blacks. You can go to any government department in the whole of Cape Town, and the whole, Cape Town is big. Cape Town is a massive metropole.
Okay.
It stretches from towns in the here in the Western Cape, Hermanus. It's all part of the greater Cape Town metropole.
Yes.
And you can go into any of these offices. You won't find a white person that is visible to the public.
Right.
And except I have attended meetings on a high level in terms of business contracts. Once you go into the boardroom, you find this white Afrikaner walking into the room, and he is like a type of a lord, which you can even see the way
lord.
In which they
right
in the way in which these colored people revere him,
right?
And that is the person that I know. That guy must be a Freemason, because
right.
he has a dictative power. He has some form of virtually a form of a god that he dictates, and when he walks into the boardroom, it's an absolute quiet.
Yes.
So, and you can realize that this person must be a Freemason. He has been in that particular position, or he has been positioned in that particular kosher seat during the apartheid years for the purpose of controlling the things when it comes to very exclusive matters.
Right.
And it can only be
the real government.
The
real government.
Pre-planned.
Right. Now,
isn't the Freemasons?
Yeah. Now, don't these Freemasons have any awareness of the fact that they're selling out their own people and that this power that they have at the moment, it can't last very long, because, you know, blacks don't care, you know, whether you're a Freemason or not. You know, right now the white farmers are taking the brunt of it, and the middle class whites are taking the brunt of the black racism and the system that the Jews and Freemasons have created. But it's gonna go on the heads of the Freemasons, I think, very soon. I don't think this system's gonna last.
Yeah, Pastor, you must remember something. If you consider, for example, that way back in 1910, with the signing of the agreements for the setting up or the establishment of the illegal Union of South Africa, there were Boers who had become Freemasons, and those Boers that had become Freemasons were the ones that were led into the signing of the agreement for the Boer Republics to be illegally incorporated into the Union of South Africa.
Yeah,
now, one must also remember that if you're a Freemason, irrespective of your race, your creed, your kind, your language, whatever, even defying your family roots and your family ties, defies that. Once you have committed yourself to Freemasonry, Freemasonry's agenda is what is the driving force in your life. Because once you have committed yourself to Freemasonry, one of the rituals when Freemasons become Freemasons is that they actually put their jacket on back to front. They put the rope around their neck, and there is a symbolic killing of that person if he should make known the secrets of the shrine.
The craft, secrets of the craft,
He would be, and that is a symbolic dying.
They're already dead. They're the walking dead.
They're already dead to their own kind and their own people and their own race and their own language and whatever. They're dead to that, because the final commitment that they have is the commitment to Freemasonry.
Yes. So they live with it, and then they're going to die with it. Because it is true that they make a death oath that on pain of death, I will not betray the secrets of the Freemasonic order.
Okay. Yeah. So, and there's secrets of the shrine, and there's secrets of the lodge, and there's secrets of the oaths and things that they they are very clearly led into belief that they cannot ever denounce that. Now, Pastor, one of the things that I must also add is, over the past, I would say, about 3-4 months, I've had numerous or quite a number of people whom have contacted me, and especially young females whom have told me that their fathers have become or were Freemasons where they were born. They were dedicated as unborn children. They were already dedicated to Freemasonry.
Wow!
And when they were born as a girl, the disappointment was that they are now girls, but they were still dedicated to Freemasonry.
Right.
And
they become talk show hosts. Right.
Where they contacted me and asked me, David, in spite of the fact that I have become Christian, now that is now, I must also add, having become a Judeo-Christian church follower more than anything else, in spite of the fact that they've become Christians, there's still some binds that keep them from becoming what they want to become as Christians. Now, they come to me and they ask me, Dave, is there a way that we can denounce this? Is there a way that we can rid ourselves of this bonds and these ties that still tie us to Freemasonry, because we've been dedicated to Freemasonry?
Yeah.
So it's something that I'm busy with as well. It's an area that I've not moved in before. What I have found is people have become, or by virtue of choice, they have become Freemasons. They want to get out of Freemasonry.
Yeah.
Yes, I've dealt with some of those people, and I've prayed with them, and I've prayed them loose out of Satanism. I've prayed them loose out of Freemasonry. It is by the blood of the Lamb. It is possible to get those people out. However, once you're dedicated to Freemasonry as a child, there are certain things during the growth of that child in the mother's womb which is already being dedicated to Freemasonry.
Yes.
I haven't dealt with that yet, and it's an area which I will have to move into in the next few weeks.
Right.
Because there are people that want to be rid of this, massive, it is like treading through a desert with a log attached to your body with chains.
Yeah.
And the further you walk, you're actually gathering the sand in front of the log, and it heaps up and it weighs you down and it burdens you, and it prevents you from being the person that you intended to be by the Creator Yahweh.
Yes, amen. And there's so many Freemasons who do want to get out, but this threat of, you know, because if you betray the craft, they will kill you.
Yeah.
They will
absolutely
kill you.
Absolutely, Pastor. And I think that is one of the major reasons why I have received up to 18, I think, death threats over the past 2.5-3 years.
Okay.
Sorry. It's now roundabout in July. It's been 3 years, and I think I've received my 18th death threat.
Okay.
In fact, people even sending me photographs of where I live.
Right.
And telling me that they know exactly where I live. They'll come after me and they'll.
I've received similar threats. I've received similar threats. So, the fact that we're public about this, that actually takes some of the, it puts a burden on them, you know, because we have identified who our enemies are. And so if they actually carry out such a threat, the finger will be pointed directly back at them. So, you know, it's getting harder and harder for both the Freemasons, the B'nai B'rith, the Communists, and, of course, organized Jewry to single us out. You know, they have been getting away with it. You know, you're probably familiar with all of the Democrats, high-ranking Democrats around Bill and Hillary Clinton who have met their violent demise in recent years, okay? Just from the threat of exposing the corruption of the Clintonistas, okay?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think they have in the order of about 42 corpses that line their footprints.
That's right. That's right. And so this has to weigh heavily on the consciences of many of the Freemasons. And they say, what have I gotten myself into? This is like the mafia.
But, Pastor, these facts are being kept away from the very people that perpetrate these things.
Mm-hmm.
They remember that they're working on different levels or different degrees.
Okay. Yeah.
And the lower degrees they don't know anything about the higher degrees. It's part of the very stern and strict code of secrecy. And they don't even know that on the 17th degree, you actually denounce your knowledge of Christ. You actually denounce your whatever had happened in your past. You denounce it, everything there, and you now accept Lucifer as the one that you worship on the 17th degree, I think it is.
Yes, no doubt. And so, so we have to, by exposing Freemasonry and all these secret societies, which, of course, they control the media as well, so that open discussion of what's going on is kept from the people. And as you say, it's kept from the lower ranks of the Freemasons and probably the middle ranks, too. Many of them probably suspect something really nasty is going on, but are living in denial, okay?
Yeah.
That these people, they're becoming the minority rapidly. And, you know, they can't be running the government of South Africa much longer. Blacks are ready to displace them. And once that happens, any semblance of order will just disappear. I think there's, you know, whatever control there is, it's had by the Freemasons. And it's not going to last very long. It's they're looking at their own demise, whether they want to realize it or not.
Yeah. Pastor, then there's a factor which is very, well, as far as I know, I'm the only one who's actually, I want to say advertised, but advertise is not the right word.
Publicized.
That actually
publicized
and promotes this whole thing about the Book of Obadiah in the Bible. it very clearly states, and the reason why I propagate that and why I actually publicize that, and I do so often on social media, is because you know about the angel that visited me on the 25th of June, 2014. And the angel revealed to me that this is what's going to play out in the times ahead. And that is what we're busy experiencing with this, so many whites being killed. Now, the other thing that I wanted to say is that during the elections, I know I have mentioned it before, but there are new listeners, and these listeners need to take heed or take note of what I'm stating now. At the time of this, and the run-up to the general elections in 1994, the blacks were singing a liberation song called One Settler, One Bullet. That was the main words to this song, but they danced and they would sing it, One Settler, One Bullet, and One Settler, One Bullet, and they would actually virtually work themselves into a trance singing this. But sometime after the 1994 election, they started singing Killer Farmer, Killer Bull. Killer
this was
Farmer,
when Mandela, Killer Bull. This was when Mandela was elected.
Mandela was singing that. His wife, Winnie Mandela, was singing it. And they were propagating this in it, of course, with the rhythm, because the blacks have a built-in rhythm to them. They dance in accord, and they actually
work themselves up into a frenzy. Yes.
Yes, they work themselves into a frenzy, and they instigate this amongst themselves. Kill the farmer, kill the boer. Kill the farmer, kill the boer.
Yes.
Now, somewhere, somebody with some form of intelligence, knowing the history and the fact that the Boers are Israelites and the Afrikaners are not Israelites but Edomites, they have now instigated the blacks to, and because primarily the Boers are the farmers or had been the farmers in the past,
yes,
so they
Boers,
actually
yes.
give them this sort of unctioning that they should go for the farmers to kill the Boers and the targeting the Boers. But what I wanted to say on this is AfriForum, the Afrikaner organization, it's supposed to be an organization that stands for the rights of all people, but they are very selective on whose rights they focus, because history has proven that they have even focused on the rights of black people.
Sure.
Now, AfriForum had taken Julius Malema to court, and when it was very clear, evident that the judge was going to rule in their favor, that Julius Malema had transgressed the findings of the Human Rights Commission, that this song was in fact an enticement to death and for the murdering
of anti-white
of
racism, blatantly.
Absolutely.
Incitement to violence. We went over this last week, and of course, they betrayed the white cause by letting Mandela and all the other blacks singing the song off the hook. They let them off the hook. So it was a bait and switch, right?
It's a clear indication that the Afrikaners still uphold this agenda, and they protected the agenda. They wanted to ensure that the agenda was not going to be hampered by decision.
Okay, here, let me try to characterize, because what you have been telling our listening audience is that the Afrikaners were the ones, and they're not Boers, they're different from Boers. Were the ones who ran the concentration camps that were exterminating the Boer people, okay?
Yes.
They were taking their orders from the British, you know, that means from the Rothschilds and the Freemasons, no doubt about that.
Yes.
Are we to understand that today's Afrikaners, all of them, you know, people who call themselves Afrikaners, because many of them are from British stock and, from Dutch stock, et cetera, are all of these people Edomites, or are many of them just befuddled Brits and Dutch people who for whatever reason, been taught to hate the Boer people? Are they still working? Go ahead.
Also, I would loosely say that perhaps I wonder if 2% of the Boers know that they are Boers, because they have been indoctrinated and being brainwashed for the past three decades, or rather for the past three generations, into believing that they are Afrikaners, because the Freemasons have set up this unitary population, a white population, that they remember that the Boers were fighting not just the British. The Boers were fighting the Australians, the Canadians, the New Zealanders, the Indians, and the Dutch. Sorry, not the Dutch, but the Irish, the Scottish, and the Welsh. And the Boers were fighting these people to a very were equipped. They were fighting basically to the bone.
Right.
And the Cape Dutch ceded or sided with the British.
Yes.
In fact, the Cape Dutch were the instigators of this whole thing. Now, if you go and read through the history, you will find that the British armed forces didn't come and fight the Boers. They came and they marched in, and they actually, there's an Afrikaans word, beset. They actually came in and they...
they took over. They took over.
They took over.
Beset, that's an English word too. They sat on us, right, and took us over.
That's right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And all this while...
Occupied.
The Cape Dutch, they came to occupy. Not one shot was fired. It was only after that the British had laid hold of one of the farmers' horse and wagon with some of these products on it that the farmer had gone to.
Yes. Interesting you should say that. Now, because this was a deliberate and unprovoked occupation of Boer territory by the British and their flunkies. And that would be the Rothschilds and their British flunkies.
For my interjection now. Yeah. But one must also remember that the British were basically lured into this event by the Jameson raid.
Right.
And Cecil John Rhodes was racked over the fingers because of that. And then we came back to South Africa, and then they sat together and they decided, okay, fine, they're going to now least follow a different route. So Cecil John Rhodes had gone back to England, and he then went into a discussion with Sir or Lord Rothschild, who was the owner, of the Bank of England.
Right.
And Lord Rothschild then decided he had a means whereby he could now entice or, in fact, force the British government by closing the taps on their financial resources.
Right.
So the British were put into this position where they didn't have an option. It was either they had to abdicate power, because Rothschild had closed the financial taps on them, and they were moved to the brink of financial disaster. And so the British then decided, okay, fine, we have no option. Let's go and occupy the Boer republics.
Right.
And that was exactly what the Cape Dutch had wanted, because once the British would occupy, they knew that by enticement and by aggravating the Boers were going to declare war. Once the Boers declared war, it was a full-out war. Nearly 500,000 British and their allied troops that were against, I think, 55,000 Boers. So you can see it was a massive... And yet they couldn't destroy... They couldn't even... they couldn't... Well, every... Just about every battlefield was won by the Boers,
right?
And then they
decided the war was lost. This again,
and then a Cape Dutch guy, a Cape Dutch person, and in fact he was also incarcerated by the Boers, and I think he might even have been brought to justice by the Boers for. The whole idea of the concentration camps.
And then the
British adopted this concentration camp idea, and they set up these concentration camps. Now, I have read sources that stated that there were approximately 122 concentration camps across not just South Africa, but across the globe, because there were concentration camps in Ceylon at the time, which is now Sri Lanka. There were concentration camps in India, on St. Helena Island, and also in
Bahia. Okay, so let me interrupt what you're saying, and I think we need to explain the Jameson raid too. But what you're saying is that the British went around seeking out Boers and arresting them all over the world and putting them in concentration camps over the world, all over the world. Is that what you're saying?
No, Pastor, they were. In fact, whenever Boers were caught in on the battlefields in South Africa, they were moved by cattle trucks to Durban, for example, and to Cape Town. And whenever you come to Cape Town, I'll take you to the
cattle trucks, like the so-called Nazis did, right?
Absolutely, Pastor. And that was the way that they also moved the women and children out of or from the farm states, which were burnt down by the scorched earth policy, which was also, by the way, the idea of one of the Cape Dutch. You can see the Cape Dutch have played a major role in this British decision making in terms of what to do with the Boers. Cape Dutch, to this day, the Cape Dutch or their remnant or their descendants have been at war with the Boers, and the Boers don't even realize that. The Boers don't realize that part and parcel of the fact that they, when there's an application for a job, on that application form, there is one of the questions is, what religion are you? And if you say you're a Christian, and they ask you, what church denomination do you are you part of? And you don't, you're not a member of the one of the Afrikaner churches. There is already a label against you because they won't select you for certain managerial positions because you're not a Afrikaner, you're a Boer. Right. But it is done very subtly over the past 1,314 years, ever since 1902, the Boers have been subjugated to the Afrikaners and have become the kicking dog or the kicking donkey of the Afrikaners. Whenever anything goes wrong, it's the Boers that cannot stand together. In the meantime, it's the Afrikaners who have infiltrated the Boers.
Okay, so here's the way I see it. What we have is white people who are either dupes or collaborators with the Judeo-Zionist Freemason cabal that rules things in South Africa and pretty much around the world, okay? Because we find this happening everywhere. And then the Boer people are getting sucked into that, and many of them have become Freemasons, not realizing that the Freemasonry is ultimately destructive of the Boer people and of the white race and of Christianity, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, I see as white people become a minority and more of a minority, and the Freemasons also become more of a minority, their power base is evaporating. I mean, this is going to blow up in their faces. So isn't it about time for people to fess up and get out of Freemasonry? Back to you.
Boston, no. In fact, let me also, I forgot to answer one of your questions. How did these Boers get into the concentration camps out in Sri Lanka and in India and in Bermuda and even in Mauritius? When they were taken as prisoners of war on the battlefield, they were shipped on cattle trucks to either Durban Harbour or Cape Town Harbour or Port Elizabeth, and even they attempted to ship them through Lorenzo Marks. But then the ships would take these Boers to these faraway lands.
Wow.
And it was part and
so
into concentration
camps. Shipped out of the country. Camp. Amazing.
They were shipped out of the country lest they should escape.
Right.
And reform again and go back into into the war mechanism of the Boers. So the British actually had torn the Boer people apart in faraway lands.
Right.
But the sad thing is this, Pastor.
Yes.
The sad thing is this. After the signing of the 1902 31st May a Treaty of Peace, called the Treaty of Vereniging, the promise was that the people who were now on these faraway islands and these concentration camps would be brought back to South Africa as soon as possible.
Oh, promises.
Which never happened.
Yeah, of course.
I've gone through some of these lists of people that died in these concentration camps, and I found that even a year after the signing of the peace treaty, some of the people were still dying in these concentration camps of hunger.
Yeah. Right.
And of diseases like measles and of diarrhea.
Right.
They were still dying a year after the signing of the peace treaty,
yes.
Which means that there was a diligent and a provocative action from these co-signees they on the side of the British.
Ethnic
and
now cleansing. One must
also remember, absolutely, but one of the things that people must also remember is that the Cape Dutch were acting as agents of the British military force in so many of these concentration camps, as commanders, as so-called
as agents, shipping agents, right?
Absolutely.
Right. Okay, this is a very interesting parallel, which I have to draw here at this point, because even in Germany, during the so-called concentration camp era, which there were no death camps in Germany, those were work camps, and I think the actual fatality rate in the German concentration camps is much lower than your people experienced in the British concentration camps. What was actually happening was that the Nazis had made an agreement with the Zionists to ship these Jews to Palestine, because the Zionists needed people, they needed Jews to populate the area, okay? And those Jews who didn't like the idea and wanted to stay in Europe, the Zionists didn't allow them to do that, okay? Because they needed to have a Jewish population to settle Palestine. So what happened was they shipped many of these Jews to Palestine. Those who didn't want to go to Palestine either wound up in America or in other places. Okay, but there was a cooperation there between the German government and the Jewish worldwide Zionist operation, because there was no Jewish state yet. Okay, so you see there's this international cooperation between these groups, which is never talked about in the mass media. And here you have, again, this cooperation between the Cape Dutch or Afrikaners and the British and the Jewish world structure against the Boer people. And this is how it must be seen.
Yes, Pastor, but there's something else as well. You must remember that the Afrikaners or the Cape Dutch emanated out of Europe as Edomites, Edomite Jews. You must remember.
Right. That is the Dutch East India Company. Yeah.
People don't realize that the Cape Dutch that came to South Africa 200 years before were in fact Edomites. They came for the financial, the Lachin
Chin. They were businessmen.
That is why they came to South
Jewish
Africa.
Jewish businessmen.
They didn't flee Europe because of their religion. They fled nowhere. They came to South Africa. They came to the table Cape of Good Hope to exploit the financial and the commercial value.
So they were not refugees.
Position.
They were not refugees.
They were not refugees, Pastor.
Yes. Pastor. Okay,
in,
they were exploiters.
Fact,
yes.
Jan van Riebeeck, this guy who has been deemed as, he came to establish the white settlement in South Africa. Even Jan van Riebeeck was an Edomite. And I don't know why people, even the Boers, what I wanted to say is that I wonder if 2% of the Boers in South Africa at the moment know that they are Boers. They are still in this, I would say, under this coma or this hypnotic state, believing that they are Afrikaners. I had a major, I would say, a scuffle with somebody on one of my Facebook pages yesterday that defended. He's an Afrikaner Boer. He's a very staunch Afrikaner Boer. He's standing for the rights of the Afrikaner Boer people. And I tell him, look, there were no Afrikaner Boers before 1982.
Right?
That was when the
That's like
Afrikaner
there were no Judeo-Christians. There were no Judeo-Christians before 1930. Right?
Yeah.
It's an invention.
Now, the term Boere Afrikaner or Boer Afrikaner or Afrikaner Boer was created by a Freemason in the early 1980s. For the sake of setting up a deception mechanism, and this deception mechanism was identified by myself in during the course of July of 2014.
Okay.
And that was when I received the first death threat by, the person who executed, who actually gave me this death threat on public media, used the beheading of the ISIS, the people that the ISIS beheaded, and where they set out the heads as on a display on the pavement somewhere in Syria.
And suggesting and this is what would happen to you if you pursued this course. Yes.
And then as an, in defense of my statement that the organization that had been set up, I named the organization and I stated that this is the chain of organizations that was used to actually isolate this from the Freemasons. But if you follow the chain, you can see the Freemason hand in every step of the way. And then with that being said, I stated I actually openly invited them to a debate. Let's debate this, whether this organization is a child that was created by the Freemasons or not. Let's debate
right.
it.
Yeah,
to this day, to this day, they have ignored, and I've openly and publicly actually I've even enticed them, I've even threatened them
right.
about
right.
this particular. If you don't want to debate this, it shows that you are acknowledging this.
Right.
And the person who actually threatened me with this beheading, afterwards, only about a year ago, I discovered that he was, in fact, a Freemason.
Right. Okay, so your suspicions proved true, right? We keep telling people about Freemasonry, how real it is and how evil it is, right? And they don't want to believe us because the mass media doesn't cover the subject.
Pastor, it wasn't a suspicion. It was, I went and I did some research on this, and I found all the traces back from this organization. I have already spent some time talking about the VVK, the Volksraad Verkiezingscommissie. It's a people's council, and they actually stole this particular name from the Boer Republics because
right.
the Boer Republics had Volksraad, but the Afrikaners that have been in cahoots with the Freemasonry and the political parties have brought about this situation where they have this particular organization, the VVK, the Boer Afrikaner
right.
Volksraad.
Right.
And
okay.
even their icons and their logos are so virtually exactly
right.
the same as that of the
Freemasons,
Cape of Good Hope,
right?
Freemason,
that's
the
right.
Freemason lodge
just,
of the Cape of Good
right,
Hope.
Just as in the American Civil War, the Freemasons of the South openly wore Knights of the Golden Circle emblems, and had the engraving of the Knights of the Golden Circle symbol on their swords, on their saddles, etc., etc. I mean, openly displaying this, okay. But nobody
yeah.
pays attention to it because mass media doesn't want to cover the subject. All right, so I just want to briefly, because most people are not aware of the Jameson raid and what that was all about. And please go through that, because to me, it's a classic false flag staged by the Rothschilds to blame on the Boers. But go ahead, tell the details of the story.
Pastor, no. At that stage, the Rothschilds were not yet involved.
Okay.
This was purely the Freemasons that had already established a base in South Africa in 1773.
Okay.
They already established their first Masonic lodge in the Cape. Now, Freemasonry was exercised primarily by the Dutch that had come to South Africa, or that had come to the Cape of Good Hope, for the purpose of establishing a settlement. And this settlement would have been to produce or to cultivate products which were intended for the selling to the ships passing by. Now, you must remember that from Europe to the Cape of Good Hope, took the best part of about a month and a half to the Cape of Good Hope. To the Far East took the best part of about 3 months on that excursion. So you can see it's a long time to use of the wind, and they were drifting against the sea currents and things. And so then you had these doldrums in the 48-degree latitudes. Either it is storms or it is doldrums.
Right. Okay. You blanked out when you were giving the exact time. How long does it take? How long did it take? We didn't hear that because you were.
Sorry,
Bart. Yeah. So how long did the trip take from South Africa to the destination, you know, which would be India? How long did the trip take?
Oh, Boston. From Europe to the Cape of Good Hope, I believe in the order of about a month and a half, 6 to 8
okay.
weeks.
Okay.
And then from the Cape of Good Hope to Batavia, which is Malaysia, Malacca.
Okay.
And the South Sea Islands would take up to 8 to 10 weeks.
Okay.
So it's a long period of time. And
yeah. Okay. So the goods transported. Yeah, we're experiencing difficulties. So the goods transported had to be primarily non-perishable for such long periods of time, unless they were livestock that were kept alive on the ships and things like that, right? So so getting back to the Jameson raid, how did that transpire? Who organized it? And what was the result? Okay, it seems.
Pastor, was. There was. Hello?
Yeah, hello? We got you back.
Hello? Can you hear me, Pastor?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. It was a conspiracy between the Cape Dutch and the Freemasons and the Jews.
Okay.
Remember, at the time there were some Jews, but it wasn't the Rothschilds. It was.
Dutch Jews.
I would say.
Dutch Jews, Dutch bankers. Oh man, we're getting to the good stuff, and we're experiencing technical difficulties. Okay, so we're trying to go ahead. Okay, all right, Pastor Martins, are you there? Oh, wow. Okay, so it looks like we're having difficulty maintaining our connection with Pastor Martins in South Africa. It's been a while since we've had this that type of difficulty.
I can hear you, Pastor.
Okay. All right, give it a shot. We have about 6 minutes left.
Yeah, Pastor. They already started with this misinformation or disinformation that the Boer republics were busy eradicating the blacks surrounding the Boer republics. So you can see, even though the in those areas where there were blacks, there were peace accords that were agreed upon between the Boers and the blacks. Mm-hmm. And a perfect example of this is, in fact, the fact that Piet Retief they already had a signed agreement with the Zulus at the time of the land, which is currently around Vryheid. And you were in the Vryheid area. Remember, I said to you that that was Boer Republic.
Yes.
And that was a false information that they were distributing across the globe, and I've even managed to trace into the Washington Times or the New York Times and the Washington Times from way back in the 1870s that these messages were received from South Africa that the Boer republics were in fact killing off massive numbers of these blacks, which is not true. They actually stated it, and it's in one of the messages or the one of the articles that I read was that they had stated that they actually decided to this to entice the British government
yes.
into annexing the Boer republics. It was an enticement that they actually okay. utilized by misinformation.
So because we're running short of time. So in other words, the Jameson raid was staged to blame an atrocity yes. on the Boer people and to justify British involvement. How many times have we seen that in the modern world?
Boston, what they did was Cecil John Rhodes then actually armed his security people on his businesses, his mines in Rhodesia and Botswana, the current Botswana, which was Bechuanaland in those days. And he actually had his security people and his mines managers and personnel trained as soldiers and equipped as soldiers with British clothing and British equipment. And they executed the Jameson raid to make the Boers believe that it was the British that had now come to actually annex the Boer republics.
Right.
And the Boers were privy to that, and they did not. In fact, they had known that this was an organized thing by the Freemasons and the Cecil John Rhodes. And then Cecil John Rhodes was commanded to return to Britain, and he was reprimanded. He was wrapped across the fingers, and he was threatened that any such events of provoking war with the Boer republics for and on behalf or making it look like Britain would actually have him withdrawn from the whole of Africa. He had to, so he had to find another means, and he came back and they went into a conference again with the Cape Dutch and the Freemasons and the Jews, and he then came up with the idea. He said he has an idea. He's going back to England, and he went and he then went into a conference with Lord Rothschild, the owner of the Bank of England, out of which emanated this like a vice grip on the I nearly said testicles of the British government.
Right. Well, it's true.
where they could not do anything other. Either they abdicate, they lose power, or they have this particular one event that they can do, and that is to now go and march into the Boer republics without firing one bullet. So nobody can turn around and say they declared war on the Boer republics. Right. But it was only after the enticement and the fact that the Boers had been driven to the point where they had no alternative, where they decided we're going to take back our republics, we're going to take back our land. The British had no right to do that because of the conventions.
Yes, yes. Okay, but we're going to have to revisit this subject because there's differing points of view. From the British side and from the internationalists who justify the raid. But from the Boer perspective, there was no justification. This was nothing but a provocation, as you're telling us now, by the Freemasons and, of course, the Jewish business interests, headed by the House of Rothschild, although the Rothschilds weren't involved directly. It was definitely Jewish business interests, Dutch Jews, who ultimately formed the Dutch East India Company, and the opium trade in India and China, right? I mean, you're talking mafia tactics here, and the history books have been rewritten so as to make the Jews appear to be the victims of all of this, right? And the Boer people's rights are utterly ignored from top to bottom in mainstream history. Okay, yes, when the Boers are actually the real victims of all of this.
Okay. Yeah. And that agenda is being perpetrated by the Afrikaners to this day. Hendrik French Verwoerd, which everybody believes was a Boer, he was never a Boer. He was, in fact, never, ever a Boer. He was, in fact, an enemy of the Boers because he, in his decisions as Prime Minister of South Africa.
Another imposter. He
fooled everybody in believing that the Boers now had the Republic back.
Definitely fooled me. Before I was aware of this history, I had no idea. All right. Okay, we've run out of time. We're just going to have to pick up. We're going to have to do the Jameson raid from top to bottom on the next show. All right?
Yes, I will do that.
Go into detail.
Boss,
okay, thank you. Right, folks. Thanks for listening. We've just run out of time, and we'll pick this up next week. Praise Yahweh, pass ammunition. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Praise Yahweh. Thank you, Pastor.